From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, presenting its inaugural season through June.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll get a preview of the upcoming Ohio River Valley Folk Festival.
I'll have a special piece about the upcoming live broadcast of From the Top at the Palladium.
I'll chat with a local composer about a song he wrote for a new Disney movie. And of course, there's our arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? But now we're going to do something sort of special and different.
Are we going to break format?
We are going to break format, Sharon, because it is that pledge break time.
Oh, I like that. And we don't want you to break your personal bank, but we do want you to go to the phone and dial 1-800-233-0020 to make a pledge of support to say, I'm here, I count, I listen to The Art of the Matter every week.
That's right, or you can go online to WFYI.org and make your pledge there and find all the great different thank you gifts that we're happy to send you. But the most important thank you, of course, is that you get to tune into Art of the Matter and hear us and know that your dollars of support are going to make Art of the Matter possible.
Absolutely.
Each and every week.
Absolutely, and we know, you know, when you're listening to us, we can see you. So we know that you multitask out there. So we know that you can listen to our interviews and make your pledge of support online. It doesn't take very long. WFYI.org is safe, secure. You can click through those fields very quickly. You can pledge a few pennies a week. You can pledge a few dollars a week, make a single gift, or make a recurring gift.
You can do a sustaining gift. You know, a great easy way to do it is maybe, you know, $5 or $10 a month, and then that adds up to a more substantial pledge over the course of the year. You can do it on a credit card or, you know, automatic direct deposit from your bank. Whatever you want to do, there's lots of ways to do it. The important thing is that you do.
Make
your pledge, that you do show your support. You've already chosen to be a listener. We're asking you to be a member if you are not already. If you are a member, maybe it's time to renew. But what's really great is if you do it now during Art of the Matter, it lets everyone here at WFYI know that you like us.
There are no bobbleheads as pledge premiums yet. We're working
them on
it, kids. But you're saying, I don't want to interact with a cold website. I'm more of a people person. I want to talk to a live person. We can accommodate that. Dial 1-800-233-0020. 1-800-233-0020.
Volunteers are standing by. And now back to our regularly scheduled Art of the Matter. Greg Ziesmer didn't mean to become the impresario of the Ohio River Valley Folk Festival, but it happened, and he's having a blast. The former Indianapolis resident moved to Madison, Indiana, began a whole new chart of his life as he dropped in to tell Sharon more about the festival coming up May 20th through the 22nd and about living on the Ohio.
Many people will know you and your wife, in fact, from your many years in Indianapolis. So what took you to Madison?
Music was the initial contact for me and my wife. For me personally, my antique furniture restoration business that I do took me through the State Museum as a contractor down there to work at the Lanier Mansion.
Gorgeous place.
And I did some on-site work for a weekend, and then I did most of the furniture that was done there over a period of years. But I went down one weekend, and they put me in a bed and breakfast, and I walked into town after, you know, getting off work there and had nothing to do except look around, and I just fell in love.
Mm.
That was in 99, and we started playing down there in 2003 at the winery and got to know a lot of friends and a lot of good people and fell in love with the town and eventually decided to move.
And you first played in the Ohio River Valley Folk Festival a few years ago, right?
Right, 2006. It was the third festival.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great. We were there with James McMurtry, and I think the Reverend Peyton was there that day.
Oh, my gosh.
He played that day.
Great
and
lineup.
Otis Gibbs played that day. So we had some of our hometown folks come down and play with us there, too. So,
How did you get involved in helping to organize it?
Well, it came about through unfortunate circumstances, really. John Walburn, who was a dear friend of mine, was the event coordinator and very passionate about the Folk Festival for the last, I think, three or four years. And he really helped refine and define what the Folk Festival is about through his vision. He died of a stroke suddenly in November, and very, very sudden. A week after our halfway event that we do to kick off fundraising in November, a week later, John passed, and the ship was kind of floundering for a little bit, and people came up to me and suggested that I would be a good fit, and they couldn't think of anybody else better. And never occurred to me.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool when people see something in you that
out.
You haven't seen in yourself.
It was flattering, and it's challenging. So that was just the end of January. I'm very fresh on the job.
Cool.
But
cool.
Having a good time, and I've got a lot of great staff helping.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I always put my friend Dan Henkel on the spot and make him define folk music for me. I'm sure you have encountered Dan through Indie Folk Series. So
absolutely.
I'm going to make you do the same thing. What do you mean by folk music? How do I know it's folk music?
I think, well, it's music by folks.
Okay, that's easy.
Let's boil it down. I think folk music is something that is inherent to our traditions and to our history and is constantly redefined and handed down. But the older forms of folk music become traditional and historic, but we're creating folk music all the time. There's contemporary folk music. There's people writing about their life experiences all the time. And
there's someone weighing in with the
yeah. Let's just get that. Let's take
with
care
a
that
little.
Right,
that was an interesting cell phone ring, which was possibly not folk music.
No, that was definitely not folk music. But let me just take care of this right now.
I should mention that as we're having this conversation, it's actually almost 2 months before the events of the festival, and you're still in the. Lining up all the detail phases, so I'm sure that was somebody contacting you about, well, what about this?
Actually, it was somebody in my furniture business, but we can edit all this out. So
okay.
Anyway, where were we?
How we know it's folk. There's contemporary folk music.
Right. Contemporary folk music is, there's touring singer-songwriters all over the place right now, you know, all over the country doing, there's a huge spike in the number of house concerts that people are doing now.
And define that, because not everybody knows what that is.
A house concert?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have a really wonderful house concert series that we do in Madison now, but there are several here in Indianapolis that I'm aware of and that are run by friends of ours that we've been party to and part of over the years. A house concert basically is a private invitational event held in someone's home, and usually it's live music that is the focus of the concert. And usually it's acoustic without any microphones, any PA, generally. It's usually a pitch-in. People come and provide a side dish. Have a little social and cocktail hour before. For instance, in Madison, we do that at 5 o'clock, and then at 6 o'clock, the music starts, the house lights go down.
Mm.
And we usually do two-hour sets with a little intermission in between to, you know, get up and stretch your legs, move around. But it's a private social event that, you know, really just features the music in a very intimate listening environment.
Sounds like a wonderful way. It's just like making friends on Facebook, except three dimensions. It's a way to connect with other people who have a similar interest in some of the music.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Music is the thread there, and the common thread. Music and food.
Music and food.
You know, and socialization.
The things that
if
make life
right.
worthwhile, right?
Yes, true.
talk about your venue.
Okay,
the
venue
festival.
Is Bicentennial Park. It's down on the riverfront of the Ohio River, the scenic Ohio River. You're looking southward and across the river over the hills of Kentucky. And the bridge there that we're getting ready to replace with our new bridge is in sight, and it's just a beautiful view. It's a terraced green lawn with a concrete pad at the bottom, so we have a lot of open space for people to bring lawn chairs and stretch out and kick back and enjoy the music. There's a full stage with lighting and, you know, nice sound system provided. It's 3 days from Friday, May 20th through Sunday evening of May 22nd of this year, the third weekend in May. And it's just a wonderful venue. It's got everything that we need for a really enjoyable weekend. It rains sometimes, so you just want to bring a little bit of preparation, but we have a hospitality tent and
family-friendly.
Very family-friendly. As a matter of fact, Sunday is especially focused on family and local and regional talent.
Mm-hmm.
We have national acts coming through on Friday and Saturday night, and I can tell you more about those in a moment.
Yeah, good.
And then on Sunday, we actually have more of a family focus, and it's a Sunday afternoon. And so anyway, if you'd like, I can tell you who we've got on the bill.
Yes, please.
We've got some great talent. Friday evening, the doors open at 5 o'clock, and at 6 p.m. is Mickey Clark and Blue Norther. It's kind of a progressive country western swing from Louisville. And then at 8 o'clock, we have Adrienne Young. She's a wonderful bluegrass songwriter. And then at 10 p.m., we have the Green Cards, which is the Green Cards are wonderful. They're also very bluegrassy, but with a Celtic twist, four-piece, very contemporary female vocalist up front. Great band. That's our Friday night lineup. And then on Saturday, we have the gates open at 11. And we have at 11:30 till 12:30, we're going to do in the storyteller tent, we'll do a workshop on the song catchers, the people that went into the hills of Appalachia and other places and brought these songs out and made them public domain. And then the music starts at 1 with the Tillers from Cincinnati, terrific three-piece old-timey trio. The Wyos, which is kind of a jug band, at 3 p.m. Then we have Paul Thorne, who many people will be familiar with here in town because he's appeared on the Bob and Tom show quite often, at 5. He's a great songwriter, very tongue-in-cheek, comedic, on the order of Todd Snyder, that kind of thing.
Has a little connection to Elvis. Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And he also went 6 rounds with Roberto Duran, apparently. He used to be a professional boxer, but great songwriter.
Interesting career
He's a
path.
A lot of fun, yeah. David Bromberg Quartet is playing at 7 p.m., and then we have Uncle Earl at 9, and the girls just really tear it up. So that's our Saturday lineup. And then on Sunday, we have Bill Langton from here in Indianapolis has his progressive bluegrass band Bluegrass Junction is playing at 1 p.m. At 12:30, we have the, before that, to start off the event, we actually have the junior high students from Madison Consolidated Schools are coming down and going to sing a few tunes.
Oh, cool.
And in kind of a glee club chorus thing, so that'll be kind of local family. Then Bluegrass Junction at 1, my wife and myself, Greg Ziesmer and Chris Luckett, are playing at 2:30. Then at 4 p.m., we've brought down Hawkeye Navi.
Oh, my gosh.
And we all know Hawkeye Navi if you've been around Indianapolis.
There will be dancing and singing along.
That's right, and pirate songs. And then at 6 p.m. we have the wonderful Carrie Newcomer, and she's going to close out the event. So that's the music for the weekend. It's pretty extraordinary.
How long is the planning process? I'm trying to picture getting everybody's schedules together. You must have to start a ways out.
We do. We start the day really about a month after the folk festival ends. Right. We have a hot wash meeting, and we go over and review everything.
What's
that
a hot wash meeting?
That's where you sit down and you decide what worked and what didn't this year, and you try and redefine and make improvements for the next year. So the tickets are currently on sale. People can go to, they can dial 800-559-2956 for advanced ticket sales, or you can visit the website at www.OhioRiverValleyFolkFestival.com to order tickets and check out more details there. Our advanced tickets are $20, and you get $10 in food and beverage coupons with that. And that's until April 30th, and then on May 1st, the tickets are $25 up until the day of the show.
Do you have a lot of people who come for the whole weekend?
We do. We have a lot of people that just come for one day, too. It's interesting. It's a nice mix, but we get a really good crowd on Friday and Saturday night especially, and we just opened up the Sunday show last year, so we're really trying to ramp that up this year and get people to come down for an afternoon and enjoy Madison along the Ohio there.
It's a beautiful drive.
It's a great town and a beautiful drive. Yeah.
I can't imagine there are too many people listening to us who've not been to Madison, but if you haven't, oh, my gosh, it's like stepping back in time.
It is.
Some gorgeous mansions, built to take the best advantage of the view of the river.
Absolutely.
A lot of great antiquing, little mom-and-pop shops and restaurants, and great places to stay. And there's not just music. You have folk crafts going on.
Oh, yeah. For the event, we have several aspects that I'd like to tell you about beyond the music. The music is, of course, the primary focus of any music festival. But we also have a storytelling tent, so we'll have storytellers on site, telling stories and sharing other forms of wealth of knowledge and music together. This year's the 200th anniversary of the first steamboat on the Ohio River.
Really?
So we have a gentleman that's a Mark Twain impersonator coming, who will be doing Mark Twain on Saturday.
Cool.
And he'll be there all weekend. But then we also have a live folk jammers gathering in the storyteller tent too. So when the storytelling is not going on, these guys will be getting together, and people can just come in and bring an instrument and kind of jump in the circle and jam and share some tunes, learn some new songs, and meet new people. So it's a social event back there in the storyteller tent. Rivers Institute at Hanover College is heavily involved in our event every year. They celebrate, especially this year with the 200th anniversary, they're bringing the steamboat race to Madison in October. And so we're celebrating that all year, and their presence will be at the folk festival this year, and they'll have exhibits on the flora and fauna of the Ohio River Valley, some interactive river adventures that you can check out, a photo booth to look at, and then they're also bringing a fish tank this year that is absolutely enormous. It was a big hit last year.
Really?
And what we're doing is they go out and they actually capture fish from the Ohio River and they put them in this environment so you can see the aquatic life of the river.
Oh.
And they're just in there for the weekend,
well,
and then
smart.
They return them back to the river. And it was a big hit last year. You could see all these, carp and
I was just going to ask. It never occurred to me what kind of fish might be in the Ohio River.
Turtles and all kinds of things. Yeah.
Huh.
You never believe how much is in
a river. There's a lot going
on
under the surface of the water.
Yeah, exactly. And so that was a real fun hit for everybody. Kids love it. We have a folk craft village this year. Again, we've been building that for the past few years. And this year it's really focused on traditional folk crafts being exhibited and demonstrated, not so much a vending area, although we will have three vendors doing glass jewelry and some beaded jewelry and some photography sales. But the folk craft village is really about demonstrating traditional folk crafts such as shoemaking, blacksmithing, gunsmithing, hand-carved turned wooden bowls and pottery, and we're going to have a loom weaver this year too.
Cool.
So people will be able to just walk from tent to tent and watch these people do their craft and ask them questions about it and inquire. So that's a nice big feature this year. We also have, starting this year, we're going to do a craft brew fest.
I heard there might be adult beverages by some microbrews, right?
Yes, absolutely. We have a craft brew committee that's putting together. We've had two or three craft brews over the years each year, and we always have the Thomas Family Winery pouring their local wine, which is delicious. But this year we're taking it up a notch. We're going to bring in up to 10 craft brewers.
Wow.
So people can have a choice of high-quality beers. We'll also have Budweiser and BudSurf, too, for those people that prefer that. But we're going to try and make it more of a focused craft beer fest and build that over the years, too, as a feature, much like the Riverfest Blues Fest that we have down there focuses on barbecue and blues. So beer is going to become an important part of the folk festival.
Well, it's thirsty work listening
it
to all
is.
That great music. I'm
it
just
is.
Saying.
I'm just saying. So that's really the big feature. We've got one other major thing I'd really like to explain to people, that if you're really interested in supporting the Folk Festival and getting some great perks, you can become a friend of the Ohio River Valley Folk Festival through a membership. If you're an individual, private person, or family, it's $100. If you want a corporate membership, it's $150. It's a supporting membership that goes to help us defray the cost of putting on the event every year.
Sure.
But in return, each membership comes with a raffle ticket for a drawing for a Clint Bear guitar. He's our local luthier in Madison that builds wonderful instruments. Mm. The guitar is valued at $3,500. And also a painting by Eric Fagan, who is one of our local favorite artists, painters. And then there's also an event and a wristband and admission to other events that we do during the year, such as the Pub Crawl, which is coming up April 16th. That's our kickoff event for our fundraising. And then, again, the halfway celebration in November when we kind of thank everybody and start into the next year. So if you do a membership, you get all those things, plus you get into the Folk Festival and you get the other two events. You get a raffle ticket for the drawing. You get also your name mentioned on our website as a contributing member. And you get our undying gratitude. So I encourage people to look into the memberships and also the pre-sale wristbands that are available right now.
Craig, if this music and furniture restoration thing doesn't work out, I think you might have a career in public broadcasting fundraising going on there.
I've watched many a marathon, I can tell you that, the telethons especially. Yeah, I've been there and done that. I've answered the phones, yeah.
How long's the drive from here to Madison?
I know
you make it regularly.
I make the drive regularly through my business, and Chris and I also come up and play a lot of gigs here in Indianapolis still and have friends that we visit. We do it. From downtown Madison to center of town is about an hour and 45 minutes.
It's not
a bad drive at all. If you're coming from Broad Ripple, we'll allow 2 hours. And, it's just a lovely event. We've really worked hard. The city has worked hard to create a beautiful amphitheater and a beautiful setting. It's just a whole city block, and there's going to be great food and vendors there this year selling some awesome things. And we're trying to diversify a little bit more and bring in healthier choices for food this year. And we're also stepping up our recycling efforts to make the Folk Festival more green. And so we're working on a lot of conscientious levels to make this the best folk festival in the Midwest.
Sharon Gamble with Greg Ziesmer. The 6th annual Ohio River Valley Folk Festival features folk music, of course, but also handcrafts, kids' activities, storytelling, food and drink, and a chance to jam with fellow musicians. It is in lovely Madison, Indiana, just a short jaunt from Indy. Find out much more, including special deals, at OhioRiverValleyFolkFestival.com. Again, OhioRiverValleyFolkFestival.com.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. You've probably heard the radio program From the Top here on WFYI Radio on Sunday evenings at 7, or perhaps you've seen one of their PBS specials on TV 20. For the past decade, From the Top has been the preeminent showcase for America's best young musicians with their programs, as well as live tours, scholarships, and education programming. And From the Top is coming to the Palladium on Tuesday, April 26th for a live broadcast. Travis DiNicola got to chat with three different people about that live show. First of all, we'll hear from Katie Kappelson, who is a harpist, then from host Christopher O'Reilly, and finally from Tom English, a young bassoon player from Carmel who'll be performing during the program.
Katie, thanks for joining us on Art of the Matter today, and congratulations for being selected to perform with From the Top.
Well, thanks so much.
Now, you're from Bloomfield, Indiana, is that right?
Yeah.
And what's your instrument?
I play the harp.
The harp. Fantastic. So you will be lugging that big harp up to the Palladium to to play. Have you selected what you're going to be playing for this?
Yes, I'll be playing Asturias by Isaac Albanese.
Excellent. And what made you choose that piece?
Well, I had played that piece earlier this summer for the Stars of Tomorrow program on the USA International Harp Competition.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of my favorite pieces to play on the harp because it has such a unique sound because it was originally written for guitar. So I had submitted it as one of my recordings for From the Top, and they really liked it for the same reasons. So,
now, have you been a fan of the show for a long time?
Yeah, I like to listen to it every weekend on Sundays.
Did you ever think you'd get to actually perform on it?
I had actually applied a couple years ago, and I didn't get in.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of thinking, no, I don't think I'll get in, but then I got the call from them, and I got in, and it was really surprising and very exciting.
Yeah, that's a huge thrill. I mean, I know it's very competitive. So obviously you've got some great musical skills. Is the harp something you're planning on pursuing? I mean, after school, going to college for? Or?
Well, I'm probably going to go to college for harp first, but I am really interested in both music and medicine. So I would probably like to keep up my pre-med requirements while I'm doing music because I want to try and pursue both fields.
Have you thought about what school you want to go to for that?
Well, I'm definitely going to apply to IU because they have one of the best harp programs. But I'm also looking at the Curtis Institute in Philadelphia to study with Elizabeth Hainan there.
Excellent. Well, both great schools. I wish you the best of luck with that.
Thank you.
So what are you doing to get prepared for performing with From the Top?
Well, I'm practicing a lot every day, and we're preparing a program to do in a local school in Carmel with another, a cellist from this area also. We're going to do that together for this school.
Okay.
So I'm kind of practicing and preparing my program for that as well as the other performance and kind of talking to my teacher about what to expect and stuff because she's had other harpists who have been on From the Top before.
Well, that's excellent. That's a great guide for you then. So not too many nerves about being on a national broadcast or meeting Christopher O'Reilly?
No, I usually don't get too nervous about performances or things like that, and I've actually met him before.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he remembers, but I met him at a concert at the Delaware Symphony one time.
Well, that helps a lot. That's great. You sound very relaxed and like you're just going to have a great time up there. Have you been to the Palladium in Carmel yet?
No, I haven't actually.
Okay, well, I think you'll be amazed and delighted, I'm sure, because it's such a great space. What have the people from the Top told you to do to prepare for this, or what do you anticipate the days being like up there?
Well, they've talked to me about some of the questions that I might be asked on the show, and they've sent us a couple of emails about what the itinerary is going to be, and like there's a pizza party the night before, and then we have a rehearsal, and they seem really relaxed and laid back and just like a really, really nice group of people to work with or spend 3 days with preparing for a radio show. So I'm really excited about that.
Well, excellent. Well, I wish you the best of luck with your From the Top appearance and with your studies. And Katie, thanks for taking the time today to chat with us.
Well, thank you so much.
Christopher O'Reilly, it's really exciting that From the Top is coming to Indianapolis, coming to Carmel, the Palladium Center for the Performing Arts. You've heard a little bit about the space. It's got quite the reputation already here in town.
We've heard a great amount about the new center, the Palladium at Carmel, and so we're anticipating it. We're always blessed with a fantastic sound crew, both for the house and for the recording. And they always get real excited when we come to a place like this. So, and also nice to have such a nice following in the Indianapolis area and be able to, bring the show to the community and have a strong house.
I think it's going to be absolutely wonderful. I know many people are very excited about getting a chance to see it live after listening to it here on WFYI on Sunday nights. One thing that I just really, really enjoy about the show is not just the great performances, but when the kids talk about their stories, about why they're musicians or why they selected the pieces. I know that the staff From the Top and you get really involved with working with those kids so that they're not just well-prepped to perform, but well-prepped to talk about what they're doing. Could you just talk about that a little bit?
Our other producers and staff who have exhausted phone conversations with each one of our guests, and it's based on those of 30 pages of interviews per show, I'd say. On the basis of that, we decide, how to proceed, whether it's going to be a straight-ahead interview, whether we want to go interview members of their swim team, something that pops out at us that, maybe they're going to a competition and they, we want them to have a tape recorder along, and so we basically have an audio diary. There are lots of things that we do with lots of kids, and it's really dictated by our conversation with them. So, by the time they come to, it will be the day before the show in Carmel, we'll get together, have some pizza, get to know each other, and those that need accompaniment, I'm their man, and we go through all of that stuff as long as we need to so that everybody goes to sleep that night knowing things are musically very much in shape, because then we do a whole dress rehearsal. In which, I can't think of anything more difficult than playing and talking. So we get them in the habit of it, and we go through the whole show from beginning to end, including performances and the interviews. And so it's in this way that, I know lots of professional interviews I've done where I've always thought, well, I'd love to have done that a second time. I might have answered differently, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And these kids are on national radio for the first time. So, in other words, it doesn't really make the interview stale between the afternoon dress and the evening performance, but it kind of focuses one's thinking. There's still a fair amount of editing that goes on. There's just not enough time to cover all the stuff, and we're constantly fighting as to how much of the program is musical content versus how much is voice and interviews, etc. And so we're always tooth and nail trying to get the kids' performances out there to the public. Very, very exciting.
Now, the show itself, when it's broadcast, is an hour long, but how long usually is the actual time that you're on stage that an audience is there? I mean, is it almost double that? Or
No. It used to be. Actually, when we started out, it was probably 2 hours. Now we've got it down. Well, we have some prelude sort of videos talking about the organization, and then we have sort of an audience warm-up, but that really takes about 10 minutes, and then I'd say on stage, we are on stage for maybe an hour and 15 minutes tops.
Okay. So pretty close
to
the time.
Even in the show version, it's pretty stripped down. I mean, after all, we're asking an audience to sit through something without an intermission. We're asking small children to do that. So you want to try and keep things as tight as possible, and it works out always quite well.
And then there's always a few surprises, I'm sure.
Oh, sure. We like that.
You mentioned the pizza party. The social aspect for these kids is a real big part of the show, it seems, for them to have that opportunity to get together and meet other really talented musicians and hear them, too.
Well, they're in many cases, they're the only kids on their block that do what they do. And, here they're meeting a sort of a national group of people all under the microphones together, and it's really like a graduating class each time. So it really is quite nice. I mean, in addition to the radio program, there will also be a morning after sort of symposium where all the kids will get together and discuss what their feelings are vis-a-vis importance of art, either in education or in the community, and in many cases, you know, are encouraged to let us know how they will, you know, bring back their experience from the top and how they can better serve their community. Invariably, they come up with great ideas in and of themselves. And so this arts leadership conference, which happens after every show, is really growing by leaps and bounds in terms of kids from our show who are going. I think we'll probably have a couple of school visits while we're in the Indianapolis area, as a matter of fact, the kids on the show. And that goes on all the time now.
And that's excellent. Now, I know that, for example, Tom, who I spoke to from Carmel, he's planning on pursuing a professional career in music. One of the things I really enjoy about the show is when you have alumni who come back and talk about their experiences, and now they've gone on to pursue professional careers as well. Getting on the show is really a difficult thing to do. I would imagine you must have many, many kids who are auditioning who want this on their resume, want this experience. Can you talk about...
Well, there are lots of kids who audition, and if they don't get in on the first try, well, it's not some sort of blacklist. I mean, even when we have precociously talented applicants, I mean, like I think we once had a 9-year-old trumpet player who was precociously talented musically, but we just didn't feel it was fair to have them, you know, engage on a national radio platform in terms of the interview. So we said, please keep in touch. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, you know, 2 years later, there she was, and perfectly, you know, capable. But, you know, it's a process that can go on any time between the first application and after they turn 18. So we encourage the kids to apply, you know, more than once. I mean, I'm happy to know that this is something that kids want to share their music on, and I think we've become sort of a national resource in that way. But we're also, you know, it is a very high level, not mm-hmm. that we've established, but by the level of our applicants. And so, yeah, there are only so many spots, and so the better the kids get, the harder it is to come by a slot. But all the more reason to use that to one's advantage as a development, as a musician, and apply later. And maybe you'll be in that slot.
Well, Tom, you're a bassoon player. You've been playing, I assume, most of your life, or is bassoon new for it?
Yeah, ever since sixth grade.
So what is it about the bassoon that you really like playing?
Well, I just love the sound. I guess it's a really kind of a mellower instrument, and it's really versatile in all the things that it can do with the music. So.
Have you selected what it is you're going to play on from the top, or can you share that with us yet?
Yeah, I think I can share that with you. It's the first movement of the Hummel Bassoon Concerto.
Okay. And why'd you select that piece?
Well, it's one of the most famous, like, classical bassoon concertos out there. It's noted for its difficulty, which is definitely one of the reasons why I picked it, because mm-hmm. I enjoy challenging music, and I thought it would, you know, better my technique and stuff.
So what made you decide to audition for From the Top? Have you been listening to it on the radio for a while, or?
Yeah, I've heard, there was somebody else from my school that actually had been on it one time, and I've heard a lot about it. I've listened to it on the radio and watched the television program that they have mm-hmm. Every so often.
So what type of, have they done any prep with you yet? I know once they get into town, they'll be working with you a lot, but what's been going on up until this point?
Well, it's mostly just been arranging everything, getting the cuts to the music ready, but we actually haven't done any rehearsing. That's saved for the day before and the day of mm-hmm. the recording.
Okay. So what do you think about playing in the Palladium? Have you had a chance to be inside there yet?
Yeah, actually. I've played in there twice now in an orchestral group, and I went there with my school, Carmel High School,
mm-hmm.
and we played a concert there, and then I went there with my youth orchestra on their open house, and we played a couple pieces. And, I mean, it's really gorgeous, and I've been to a couple of the Carmel Symphony concerts there, And you can, I mean, you can really hear everything. The acoustics are really good.
Yeah,
I mean,
they are absolutely amazing. Is that a little daunting, though, for you? I mean, you're going to be, you know, up there. I mean, it's a good-sized stage, big audience, and also, you know, live broadcast. The piece you're doing, it's a solo piece, or is it with piano accompaniment?
It's with accompaniment.
Okay. But, I mean, still, it's a lot to take on. I mean, it's got to be a little daunting, I would guess.
Yeah, I mean, it is a little bit. I guess the best thing I can do is just prepare all I can before I get up there. And I just always think about what I'm playing the music for the audience's enjoyment, and so they can leave with something that, I don't know, that they can keep some kind of emotional experience that.
Mm-hmm.
Is memorable.
We heard Travis DiNicola with Tom English, a young bassoonist from Carmel, who will be featured during the live broadcast of From the Top on Tuesday, April 26th at the Palladium. We heard from harpist Katie Kapelson, also a young performer, and from their host, Christopher O'Reilly. For more information about tickets for the show, visit thecenterfortheperformingarts.org. Again, thecenterfortheperformingarts.org. And remember, you can always listen to From the Top here on WFYI on Sunday evenings at 7.
Hey, Sharon.
Yes, Travis.
You know what time it is?
It's time to dial 1-800-233-0020.
Or to log on to WFYI.org. That's right. It's time for all good listeners to become members.
I love it.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, and then, of course, it's also time for that calendar we call
What Will We Do? But one of the answers to that question is become a member or
exactly.
Renew your membership or give an additional gift.
That's right. It's a perfect time to do that. And WFYI relies on listeners like you who become members. And that's the best way to show your support. And it's a great time to show your support when you're listening to a locally produced arts program like
what could you be
Art
talking about?
Well, yeah,
the Art of Matter? I'm shocked.
Well, you know, if you call in right now or you log on and email in your pledge right now or however you do it, you know, it lets everyone here at WFYI know that, you know, you are listening to a locally produced program that you appreciate about the arts each and every week.
Absolutely. So
yeah.
We hope that you will do that right now, WFYI.org. It's safe, secure, it's fast. You can even listen to some arts events while you're making your pledge
what
or your
idea.
Renewal. Or you can dial 1-800-233-0020. If you do that, turn the radio down in the background until
yeah.
you're done with the phone call.
Okay. And then you can come back and listen to us on our calendar. Let's say it a second time.
What will we do?
So what else are we doing this weekend?
Well, happy. I'm sorry that I haven't said this to you yet. My goodness, we're halfway through the month, and I have failed to say Happy Poetry Month to you.
Happy Poetry Month,
Happy
Sharon.
Poetry Month. National Poetry Month. And here's something you can do to celebrate. There is a poetry cafe going on at Ivy Tech Community College in the NMC building, room 438, on Tuesday, April 26th. It's a two-hour event. There's an open mic program starting at 2. At 3 o'clock, there's free refreshments and readings of students' favorite poems. And then 3 to 4, a program by the Indiana Air Poets, which is a group
that's
comprising
very fun. I like
Joyce Brinkman, Ruth Ellen Burns, Joe Hytus, and Norbert Kropp. You've seen their poems etched into artwork at the new Indianapolis International Airport. The Air Poets will be reading selections from their recently published book, you know the name, Airmail. All of that's
nice.
Going on April 26th at Ivy Tech Community College.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Hey, something going on tomorrow afternoon, Sunday the 17th at 3 p.m. at the Arts Garden down connected to the Circle Center Mall. The Indianapolis School Ballet will be performing a free one-hour program featuring 32 of their dancers from across the central Indiana region, and it includes excerpts from their upcoming main stage production of the ballet Capalia, which will be taking place in May, as well as some other works that are going to be featured as well from Sleeping Beauty and some other ballets. So again, that is tomorrow at 3 p.m., an hour of free ballet at the Arts Garden with the Indianapolis School of Ballet.
64 toe shoes. Just count them. Hey, while you're at the Arts Garden, you might want to check out a very cool exhibit of photographs by David Bartley, local art photographer. It is Look Up, and they're photos that he took of all sorts of cool things in nature, mostly including views looking up, beautiful photos of the sky and of birds and of flora and fauna in general. That's on exhibition right now at the Indianapolis Arts Garden.
Very cool. Hey, if you are a folk music fan or just really like good acoustic music, then tonight is the night to go check out the Indie Acoustic Cafe series. It's their last concert of the season, featuring Brooks Williams, who is a guitarist. He's been considered one of the top 100 guitarists of all time by Guitar Magazine for his folksy, bluesy music. Also opening with him will be Amy Spies. Again, this is at the Indie Acoustic Cafe series. You can go to IndieAcousticCafeSeries.com for more information. It takes place down at the Wheeler Community Arts Theater in Fountain Square. It's an especially good night to go because not only is it going to be a great concert, but the Indie Acoustic Cafe series really needs your support if they are going to continue. They've been doing this for 14 seasons, and they are starting to struggle a little bit, and there's talk that they may not be back next year.
Uh-oh.
Unless they get a really big crowd tonight. So tonight's the night to go.
Step it up. Turn out. This Sunday at the new Indiana Landmark Center, don't forget, you have a chance to go in absolutely free and get tours and hear some live music. There's kids activities. That is this Sunday, tomorrow, from 11 to 2, and that's at 12th and Central, beautifully restored former Methodist church. Check out the stained glass windows and the great acoustics as well.
Very cool. And tonight at the Harrison Center is the fundraiser for Kate Lamont, the musician, who was in a hit and run accident down at South by Southwest. And it's a fundraiser for her tonight. There's a silent auction. There's food. There's drink. There's lots of other music and performances. A great thing to swing by tonight at the Harrison, starting at 6 p.m.
Speaking of visual art, if you didn't get a chance on First Friday, April 1st, to check out Gallery 924. I love Jason Board's work. This exhibit is called Boundaries of Existence, and they're these very whimsical pieces that he describes as immersive sculptural environments. They play on repetition and tension, a lot of natural materials, and in fact, they look like something that a lot of his pieces look like something that grew from the earth. Gallery 924 has extended hours occasionally during the week. Look for the signboard outside. Their office at, surprise, 924 North Pennsylvania Street. They're in the offices of the Arts Council of Indianapolis.
There you go. Hey, Sharon, what are you doing on the afternoon, or lunch, let's say, on Friday, April 29th?
I don't know. Do you have some ideas?
Yeah, I think you and I should be the MCs for Young Audience's big event.
That's a fabulous
That's
idea.
That's a great idea. Is this a surprise? Young Audiences of Indiana is celebrating their 50th anniversary. That's why it rang a bell. I'm like, what? I know I'm doing something then. They're celebrating their 50th anniversary this year, and they're also hosting their big national conference with Young Audiences chapters from all over the country coming to Indianapolis for the conference at the Marriott. And the conference is focused on science and technology and engineering and how that all connects to the arts, and there's lots of great speakers and lots of great panelists, and the special lunch that they're having, the community luncheon, at noon, Sharon, put this on your calendar, on the 29th, Sharon and I will be your MCs for that lunch, and there'll also be some great guests, and of course, it's at the new JW, which is pretty cool,
Absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it should be very fun. There's a professor and dean of visual communications at Laguna College of Art, and he's going to be talking about e-learning and gaming and how that affects the arts and learning. Should all be very cool. You can check out yaindy.org for more information about Young Audiences, the conference, and their lunch.
Very good. Meanwhile, should we remind
yes.
them
What's
that they
that
can
number
call
again?
1-800-233-0020, 1-800-233-0020. I had a chance to say that to a table mate at Indy Reads Alphabet Affair last Saturday night. She was saying, I haven't gotten around to pledging during Silent Web Week, and I said, it's not too late, you can still
do it.
You
can do it now.
It's too late for Silent Web Week, but you can still make that call, 1-800-233-0020, or...
Go online, wfyi.org. You are a listener already, that's what you've chosen to be. Now choose to be a member with your support. WFYI.org or Sharon, last time?
1-800-233-0020, and thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
You never know where your friends will end up, and it's worth putting your art out in the world. Those are the lessons that Jeremy Scheer learned, and he explained how keeping both of those tenets in mind resulted in his song, In Deep, ending up in a brand new Disney movie, Prom, coming out at the end of this month.
So, for people who recognize your name from the credits of Sound Medicine, how did you become a songwriter as well?
Well, I've been writing songs for a long time, probably in one way or another ever since I was in high school, but never really seriously pursued it, until now. It's just something I've always done and enjoyed doing, and it came sort of easily, but mainly just for fun.
Do you sing?
Excuse me.
Do you sing?
Yeah, just, you know, something to do with my brother who I write songs with and friends and things like that.
And do you play keyboard, or how do you do the actual composition?
Well, I play guitar is the main instrument that I play, and I usually when I'm writing songs, it's usually on the guitar, and sometimes it begins with an idea for a lyric of some sort, something that usually just sort of pops into my mind, or sometimes I'll just be strumming the guitar and a chord pattern will emerge that sounds interesting, and I'll start to just sort of come up with whatever words come into my mind, and if I'm lucky, sometimes it sort of shapes itself into a song.
How would you describe your style?
It sort of depends, but I guess my style is sort of, because I play an acoustic guitar mainly, it's kind of little folky, little kind of folk rock, sort of indie sound. I grew up listening to the Beatles a lot, you know, one of my favorite bands. Some of the greatest music ever made. Other songwriters that I really admire, like Elvis Costello or Elliott Smith, Simon and Garfunkel. So I think like a lot of songwriters, the kinds of songs that I write are influenced by the types of music that I listen to and the songwriters that I like. And often when I'm writing a song, it'll sort of emerge from trying to learn somebody else's song. You know,
Some
song that I like and I want to learn how to play it, and I'll try and I don't quite get it, but something else will emerge that I somehow try to make mine.
Wow, that's a cool process. So you kind of said this a minute ago. It starts with a riff, it starts with a tune rather than the words, or does it sometimes start with the words?
Sometimes it starts with the words. It'll be, if I'm kind of daydreaming, or I'll sometimes wake up with, for no particular reason, with some phrase in my head that doesn't make any sense. It's not related to anything, and it just sort of sticks with me, and I'll start kind of saying it to myself, and sometimes I'll just forget, but sometimes if I have the presence of mind, I'll actually write it down and then maybe later come back to it and, you know, strum a few chords on the guitar and see if it can shape itself into a song. Or sometimes if I'm out for a morning run, without really thinking about it, certain things will just sort of pop into my head. Sometimes it's a melody, sometimes it's a phrase or a couple of words. And it's usually, and anytime I sit down and actually try to write a song, it often doesn't really happen, or it's a lot harder. It's when you're not trying that it sometimes kind of bubbles to the surface without even being totally aware of it.
The muse can't be summoned on command. She just drops in.
Sometimes. Although the song that I wrote for this movie was a little bit different, if you want to hear about that.
I do, and I want to know how you go from being in the middle of Indiana writing songs and you know, living your life and to being involved with a Disney movie. How did that start?
Well, it started like this. I'll start way back at the beginning, if you want.
Yes, please.
About 10 years ago, a little bit longer, my brother and I, my brother's name is Dan Scheer, we've been writing songs for years, some together, some apart, but we decided to record them and make an album, just on our own, and he was living in Los Angeles at the time, and so we did that and made this album and gave it out to all our friends. And one of those friends is a guy named Joey Nussbaum, who at the time was an aspiring Hollywood director. And so fast forward about 10 years, and Joey Nussbaum is now an established Hollywood director. He's made about four or five movies, and his latest movie, which is coming out at the end of April, is called Prom. It's a Disney movie about high school prom. And along the way in his other movies, he'd always sort of checked in with us about, you know, maybe there's a song we have that could work for the movie, but it never quite worked out. And this time, the movie that he made, the Prom movie, is supposed to be sort of a throwback to 80s movies like John Hughes, where they featured a lot of, at the time, very new sort of indie music. And they wanted to do that for this movie as well. And so he got in touch with me and with my brother, and he asked us if we wanted to write a song for the movie, to try to come up with something new. And so, of course, we said, sure. And so he sent us the script, and we both read it. And I read the script and just sort of fixed on a certain character. I mean, I haven't seen the movie yet, so I don't know all the scenes or anything, but there's this one particular character in the movie, and I just sort of, I like that character. And he's a character that is sort of always trying to find a girlfriend and to try to find a date for the prom, and he's having a really hard time. And that just, I like that part of the story. And so I started to try to come up with some kind of, with something, a song that would kind of speak to that plot line in the movie. And, you know, again, I sat down and sort of tried all sorts of things, came up with all sorts of ideas, none of which quite worked. And then I decided to stop and take a break, and I, at the time, I had a dog, and put the leash on the dog and went for a walk around the block. And without really thinking about it, something just popped into my mind. I remember it was a beautiful spring day, maybe it was summer, and the grass was really green all around. And I remember looking at the grass, and the line, "The grass is always greener," kind of popped into my head, and that's the first line of the song. And I remember seeing, you know, a bright red stop sign, and that these sort of colors and images sort of started to come together in a weird way. And by the time I got back to my house about 10 minutes later, I essentially had the song all there in my head. And I picked up the guitar and I started strumming and found the chords. And within about 20 minutes, it was done.
That's fantastic.
And I recorded it. I have a little home studio, recorded it, sent it off to my friend Joey. And within a couple hours, he wrote back saying, you know, this is
it. Oh my gosh.
And so that's how it happened.
Now, how does it work? Obviously, all movies have scores of one kind or another, regardless of how much music or how many songs they have in them. How does it, did you have to, after you wrote the song, after you created it, do anything to it to make it fit better within the overall picture, or is your piece pretty standalone?
After I wrote the initial song, it went through a couple of revisions. My brother heard it and made some suggestions, and my friend Peter Ermey, who's lives in Bloomington, also a very talented musician, we played the song together a little bit, and he made some suggestions. And then what I'd sent to my friend Joey initially, it was just a scratch demo. And once he said that he actually really liked it and they wanted it for the movie, at least potentially, we went into the studio here in Bloomington. So there are, you know, several professional recording studios here. So my brother came in from Detroit, and my friend Peter joined us, and the three of us went into the studio and spent a couple hours, and we did a more official version of the song, just to make it sound a lot better, and added some other parts and background vocals and that sort of thing. And then we sent it, I guess to answer your question, no, we didn't have to. They liked the song just as it was. I mean, it helped that I had read the script of the movie, and that I knew the story and I knew the character, so I really tried to tailor the song to get the right feel. I mean, the song itself it's not about that character. It's not specific. It doesn't specifically mention moments in the movie, but the mood of it and the feel of the song works really well for what the movie is trying to do. And so once we sent the official version, they just liked it, and that was pretty much it.
So that's the version we'll actually hear when we go to the theater to see the film.
I think so. Yeah, I mean they didn't change the lyrics or the song. There was another version of the song done by a producer that we've worked with before in Hollywood, adding some other layers to it, like adding some electric guitars and some drums. The version we did here is very acoustic, and I'm not 100% sure exactly which version is being used, but it's essentially basically the song that we wrote without much alteration at all.
Now, you won't get a chance to see the film until it's actually released, right? Will you get any kind of advanced screening copy since you've participated in it?
Well, I am. My brother and I are going to the premiere of the movie.
Oh, that's wonderful.
In Hollywood in just a couple weeks.
Oh, that's great.
So we will get a chance to see it before it officially comes out, which is great. Very exciting. I've never done anything like that before.
Yeah.
So we are doing that. We will get a bit of a sneak peek.
What's going, without giving too much away, what's going on the screen at the point where this song is used? Do you have a sense?
I don't know.
Oh, really?
I have not seen it.
Okay.
And yeah, so I know that, you know, I think the way that film scoring works, I mean, I've never done that and don't do that, but you know, that's done in close conjunction with the actual movie as it's playing. You know, I think the composer watches the movie and composes. So, but that's not how this worked at all. We just sort of wrote the song without seeing anything.
And it's not for
I wrote it before the movie was shot.
Sure, so it's not for a specific point in the film or anything.
Well, I didn't write it with any really specific point in mind, but as
right.
I understand it, the song is featured prominently in a specific scene.
Oh.
But I haven't seen that scene, and so I don't know. I'm curious to find out.
How exciting.
Yeah.
And nerve-wracking in a way as well. So,
sort of, yeah. I mean, it's a great opportunity to have the song in the movie. You know, as I said earlier, songwriting for me has always been something that's more sort of fun. You know, I would do it, I will do it, you know, no matter what. And but to have the opportunity to have it in a feature film and that a lot of people will hopefully go and see, is just really thrilling and a great opportunity. And, you know, who knows, it might even lead to more opportunities, which would be wonderful, but it's just great. Like any writer, songwriter, or writer of any type, the whole purpose of doing it, you hope, is to get it out there and have people read your stuff or hear your music and hopefully like it. So this is a really exciting and unique opportunity, and I'm thrilled to have the opportunity, and so is my brother.
Sharon Gamble with Jeremy Shear. Prom from Disney Pictures opens April 29th. Listen for Jeremy's song, In Deep. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4, when I'll learn about the AIA Indiana Architecture Awards.
I'll get a preview of the Carmel Actors Theater production of Chicago.
And I'll find out what's new with the Indiana Wind Symphony's longtime music director and founder. Plus, we'll have our arts calendar we call What'll We Do?
So please listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 for The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, presenting its inaugural season through June. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.